what is like if I say what's the theme, the title, so I know what to.
The title is your life, mainly your immigration experience,
okay.
A little of your life before,
yeah.
and then coming to this country,
okay.
And then a little about what happened.
Okay.
And Ellis Island fits in there.
If
okay.
I get off the course or so, or tell me.
Okay.
I mean, you may ask a question. I'll go. Answer something else. So
okay,
I definitely will tell you.
I don't
care what you say. If I get off course or talk too much, say it's enough, put me back on the course.
Okay, all. I'll do that if you'll tell me things that I don't know enough to ask when they fit in with your story.
But if I go off course, ramble, tell me, well, I'm not interested, Jack.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I will. All right, I'm here with Jack Rubin, and I'm here in the Jewish Community Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's June 22nd, and this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. Mr. Rubin came from Lithuania in 1921 when he was 11 years old, and he left from Antwerp. And
we were in Antwerp, so yeah.
You were in Antwerp, okay. And
Liverpool too, seems to me now. This is, I was 11 years old. This is 80 some years ago.
Okay, all right. And you were on the Aquitania. You remember that?
Canardline.
C-U-N-A-R-D. Right. Okay. Please, if you would tell me first the name you were born with, the name you came here with.
That's what I was going to tell you right away. Rubinowitz.
Lubinowitz,
yeah.
L-U-B-I-N.
Rubinowitz.
Oh, Rubinowitz.
Rubinowitz.
Right. Okay.
Rubinowitz.
Rubinowitz. And what was your name besides Jack? What was your name?
Yaakov Jacob.
Okay.
Now, Annette, I have a quick little story.
Good.
About
great.
It. People in Vandergrift, which will come later, it's 34 miles from here. Are all Christian? Most of them were Christians. There were maybe 6,000 families in the town, and there were about 10 Jewish families. And we were in the retail business, and I got to know them all Christians, and I started to learn about knowledge about English and all that. And this. Going back 80 some years, and I didn't know I was going to do this, so I hesitated at certain times to get my recollection of this.
Okay, take your time.
So then I went to a yeshiva. I'm trying to abbreviate, so not to make it too long. I went to yeshiva, and I didn't like it, and I lived with an uncle and aunt in Bensonhurst in Brooklyn. And like they had five children, the family, an uncle and aunt in Bensonhurst. And I didn't like the learning to be a rabbi. We have eight rabbis in a row in our family from my father on. I was supposed to be not the ninth. But I didn't like the rabbis, and I got out of it. There's a story to that, but maybe it's going to be too long. But if you have room later, I can tell you about that story. But anyway, where I went with the family, an uncle and aunt, cousins. I liked the athletics that they were in. I'm telling you the story about the name. And the Christian people didn't know how to pronounce Rubinowitz. Rubinowitz, Vich, this, that. And they had problems. So then we were in retailing and we changed our name from Rubinowitz to Rubin. Of course, the name Rubinowitz, Witz, is a lot of Jewish people are named Rabinowitz from Israel. He was the prime minister of Israel. His name, he changed Rabin, but they all come from Rabinowitz. And so the Christian people would come to me. They got to know me. I got to know English. And he said, "How come, Jack, that you changed your name from Rabinowitz to Reuben. What made you change it? I said, I'll tell you. And this is sort of a little bit made up from a little bit of this, because I thought it would add to the authenticity of the name. Yeah. And Rabinowitz is, Witz is the son of. When you say Rabinowitz, Witz is the son of Reuben. Reuben is a tribe of Jacob, one of his 12 sons, Jacob. And so they said, how come you changed from Reuben? Well, you know, they couldn't pronounce Rabinowitz and all that. That's not what I told them, because I figured they wouldn't really fully understand. I said, well, I'll tell you something. I saw when I joined with my cousins who were keeping me, and they belonged like in Brooklyn, like the JCC, and they had a boxing ring, fighting, and so I liked that, so I became a fighter. And they used to, in Vandegrift, which was mostly going, they used to get mixed up with the names and all that, and they couldn't pronounce it. And they called it all kinds, so we changed our name because the going couldn't pronounce it too much. And we changed it from Rabinowitz to, how do we get to it? I said, I became a fighter. I did. And I was a featherweight in Brooklyn, amateur mm-hmm. fighter. Okay, I was still run track too, but this was to the story. I became a fighter, amateur fighter in the ring. And one day I was in the ring with a fellow, and he knocked the wits out of me. And when he knocked the wits out of me, I became from Rabinowitz. We knocked the wits, I became Reuben.
That's great. I never heard a better name change story as that. That's wonderful.
No, I'm not telling you anything.
That isn't true. Absolutely.
True.
Yep. Okay. All right. So great. Okay, so that's when you changed your name. Okay, let's start out. Give me your birth date, please.
April 21st, 1910.
And
in Hebrew, it was the first day of Chol Hamoed Pesach. I don't know if you want to add.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. And where in Lithuania were you born?
We call it Vilna Gubernia. Gubernia is like the county. Like.
Okay.
There's Grodno Gubernia, Vilna Gubernia. Like here, we're Allegheny County. Vilna, Grodno, and I came from Grodno Gubernia. And the name of the town is Vasilishok.
Could you spell?
All right. The two names they called it. One is Vasilishok. V-A-S-I-L-I-S-H-O-K.
Okay. Okay, and how about the Gubernia name?
Gubernia is like the county.
Yeah, and what county was it?
Vilna. Everybody knows Vilna.
Oh, Vilna.
There, yeah.
Okay.
V-I-L-N-A.
Right, okay.
My father was sort of, he was like a sheikhet. It's a slaughterer.
Oh, uh-huh.
Sheikhet.
Okay.
A slaughterer. Now, killed chickens, kosher chickens, what do you call it? Fowl, cows, and this, that. He was a sheikhet over there, and he was he did the godly things for the synagogue and all that. He was a religious person, and he became that when he came to America too.
Uh huh. Okay. Now, were you in
Vasilishok? Some call it over there Vasilisky, on the map it's called Vasilisky. V-A-S-I-L-I-S-K-I.
Okay.
In Polish, it's Wasilewski. On the map, it's called Wasilewski.
Okay. Well, you call it, though,
Vasilishok.
Vasilishok.
V-A-S-I-L-I-S-H-O-K.
Were you in Vasilishok up until you left
Lithuania? We left in 1921. I gave you the
yes. Test. Okay. What do you remember about Vasilishok?
I can tell you now, I can tell you the story. In a moment,
okay,
but
sure.
How much time do you want me to spend on it?
Well, you know, I would say for to talk about this, maybe, you know,
okay,
you just
okay.
tell...
Okay, I'll use my judgment.
Yeah, right.
About 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, good.
I was born I can go on with my family and deaths and war. I was born in 1910. First World War started in 1914.
Right.
And finished in 1917. We were 3 miles away from the battles.
Oh.
In First World War.
Do you remember any
yes,
battles?
Yes, I remember. I'll give you some. It's even as I talk now, and when I finish, you'll say, "How does he know all that?" He was only 5 years old. No, 11 years old. My mother had me, and she died 5 years later. For the first time, when I was 5 years old, we didn't have any
electricity.
Electricity. Water we had to go to when we washed and all that. We went to the Teich, which meets the river. We had no toilets. We had no baths. No automobiles. We had airplanes because the war was going on. The war started in 1914, which I said. Is this going in on that?
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
I wonder just how much to talk on it. Mm-hmm. And one day, a few little stories. I walked in, I had to go to the bathroom. Of course, there was no bathrooms, no baths.
Right.
We had nothing. Many times, no food. And this one story, I had to go to the bathroom. We had to go outside our houses. And sometimes they had the pots and all that to go to the bathroom. And I walked into the room. I can go out a lot more. You can stop me on some of those things. Yeah, I can talk for about an hour, but I won't. I walked into the room, and there on the floor, dirt, what do they call mud floors.
Mm-hmm.
No such things. People ask me, what kind of floor did you have? You know, I have to think. And it was just mud, you know. No wood or anything. I walked in there, and I saw something that was odd on the floor. I get tied up sometimes. You'll excuse me.
Sure. Yeah.
I saw a body on the floor, but I didn't know what it was. So I didn't know. So there were two women on the one end of the body on the floor, one here and one here, and the body was on straw. We had no coffins or anything. Because I said, "What is this?" They said, "That's your mother. She's dead."
Hmm.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But I didn't know what dead meant. Mm-hmm. I was 5 years old, so it was the first time I witnessed it. They had to tell me what it was, but it didn't make an impression on it because I didn't know what dead meant. That's...
Wow. So what was your mother's name?
Her Hebrew name was Kayla Rochel. Kayla is Celia. Rachel. Rochel is Rachel. But in Hebrew, it was Kayla Rochel.
Could you spell the Hebrew name?
Kayla is Carol's. Today, and Rachel is... Rachel is Rochel, and Rachel is the English name. And it was one of Jacob's, one of the 12 tribes. He had 12 sons, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, Dor, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, and Binyamin. He had 12 sons and two
daughters.
And her name Kayla is like Celia, in that order. And Rochel is Rachel.
Okay. Well, now, so here is your mother, And I guess you found out that what dead meant, and
yeah,
what happened
but
to you.
It didn't mean anything to me. It left no impression.
Uh-huh.
Because I was 5 years old.
And what was your father's name?
Reuben. But I could say Reuben. Reuben Yonah, that's the Hebrew name. Reuben is Reuben, one of the tribes. Yonah is from a Hebrew. Jonah, see, is Yonah.
And was he around when your mother died?
Oh, yes. He just died recently.
Uh-huh. So you were left with your father. Were you the only child?
No, there was... We had six boys and one girl. My mother... that was my first mother. That was the mother.
Yeah.
His wife, my father's wife. That was his first wife. She died. And I'll tell you a quick little story about that. And if I am going, and this is just what I know.
No, go ahead. You keep going. Yeah, I'll stop you if I want to.
You say, well, it's enough, you know. My father was, I'm going to talk and then do what you want with it. My father have people to work for us. They're not Jewish. Here too, maids like.
Mm-hmm.
And when they start talking about Jesus Christ and all that, I'm versed a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not here to interest too much. But they asked me. We talked about Jesus Christ and all that, and about the religions. I talked to them because they don't know anything. I even gave seders. Bill's going to go back if you want that information. I used to give seders to church groups and to churches for my own knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody we had 200 in churches, sometimes 30, sometimes 50. And we got to talking about Jesus Christ, that he, the second Messiah, that the one that's the one we always talk about, Jesus Christ, that he's going to be come back and he'll be the Christ. When you say Christ, means the one that's going to, the God. God, mm-hmm. The God that they talk about,
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
That he's going to come again, and we're going to be freed from all the slaves that we did and all we have done. But he's going to come back, and he's going to clean everybody off to the point where now they don't go to hell. So they said that when he comes, then he's going to say, if you committed a sin, I forgive you all. He's going to die, as Christ, for those sins. So we got to talking about, and they asked me, who do you think is going to come? God is going to send another one. Jesus is the Son of God. Are you acquainted with those
things
I'm talking
yes.
about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's going to come, and he's going to be the God, and he's going to say to everybody, your sins are forgiven. So that's not what I want to say. But so they say to me, who do you think is going to be the new God that Jesus Christ is going to, or God is going to appoint? I said, oh, I don't know. You know, it's up to God. According to them, I got to go into their thinking, you know. I can't say what I think in a way. So I said, oh, well, I don't know, but... it's going to be a very, very smart man, good man, and he'll be godlike. I said, who's it going to be? So I said, oh, I can't tell you that. How do I know? But I can tell you this, he's going to be godly and everything else. Well, is there any person that you would think that could be that to fill this, the bill, to be a god? I said, I hate to tell you this, you know, I can't tell you who, but if you would ask me, if you had somebody in mind, I'd say yes, and they'd say, well, who would it be? I said, my father. It's hard for me to talk about it.
Wow.
So, and then they said, why do you say it? Because I'm not going to go into it. The things he has done for people. He couldn't speak English hardly, you know, but he was such a good man, and his qualities of life were godly.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, where did this happen? This happened when you got to...
And we got my brother, two brothers from Lithuania. They came here maybe in 1914, 1916, and they came by themselves to America, to Vandergrift. It's 34 miles from here. That's, and they brought us over, the brothers.
I see. Yeah. So, okay, so when your mother died, your father was there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll tell you. So then my father was a godly man, that's what I... Mm-hmm. And I always tell to other people for different things as we say, even Goyim, they want to ask. They people, the Goyim, would even want to know my history.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something about me, not now, if you have room in there.
Okay.
A little story, which is quickly about myself. But I'm not going to mention that. Now.
So then now we'll go back. Yeah, your mother died, father's
there. I'm trying not to go off
the track. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So if I do, you see, I think one thing, you know, I feel when I'm talking about my mother, it's the first time, you know, how much did I know after 5 years? I'll tell you sometimes about the war, about him being almost people wanting to kill him and all that kind of stuff. But that's something else. But it's all in that five-year, prison, well, the soldiers were there.
So the First World War was going on then?
I was born in 1910. The war started in
1914. Right.
Now, I just wanted to say there was trying to get into that part. It's rolling, but I don't know. Anyway, so then my father was godly, that was the idea. Mm-hmm. And he was the president of the bank, had no money. I said he always believed in two things that he taught me, never to lie. And he hated, and he didn't like material things. Later on, maybe towards the end, he made aliyah to Israel. Not real long ago, and he didn't like money, mm-hmm. which is strange. People don't believe you. He gave everything away. He didn't like to my father. That's the type of a man he was,
mm-hmm.
and that he tells. I'm sort of twisting, but it's in that same circle.
Okay.
It says in the Bible, when you're born, you come out naked. And you should remain your life. You have to have sustenance for your food and all that. And then you die. And when you have died, you shouldn't take anything with you. You came out naked, you go out, you go back naked.
Mm-hmm.
So now he had, I'll tell you later from my bar mitzvah, but that's something else, depends how much information you want. He had saved up, it's another story, but I'm just going to give it briefly. He saved up enough money. We didn't want him to go to Israel. But he saved enough money to have for all his expenses, about $3,000. I'll tell you something about that.
Is this when, after your mother died, he
saved
all right, it
up? Yeah, okay, I'm coming to my mother died, yeah. And he had about $3,000 for funeral expenses, but he gave it all away before he was dying. He had cancer in Israel. Mm. He made an aliyah at that time, and he gave everything away. He died, he was broke. He gave everything away, the $3,000. We later paid his expenses. But that's the type of a man.
Yeah, that's the type of a man
mm-hmm. he was. So now I'm going back.
Going back to Lithuania now.
Yeah, now. Now, he was a great man.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand, and you would, because of your position and all that, that he was godly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell it to a lot of people, especially in America. But why? What do you mean he gave all the money away? And that's the reason I'm going to come back after a while to my bar mitzvah, which is short, but it's interesting, especially in America. So now the people say, well, we have to get, he's already had, I don't know, he had two sons at that time. I don't know. He had so I want to abbreviate a lot of this. So now Rabbi Rabinowitz, you know, was there. And We got to get him married. He had at that time two sons, as far as I know. Yeah, two sons. Later on, she died, and he has to get married again. It doesn't. We need a wife. There's nobody in Vasily Shaw that's good enough for Reuven Yehuda Rabinowitz, you know. He's like godly.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent one, I told you about Vilna Gubernia. Mm-hmm. There was another town like Grodno. It's close enough. It's like New Kensington, and which is not far from here, Butler, Vandegrift. They had another like Vilna Gubernia. And nobody in the town of Vandegrift would be suitable for a wife for him after my mother died. So they sent a committee of three men with horse and wagon, with no more automobiles. Nobody ever saw an automobile. To Grodno, which is they sent three men with a horse and wagon to this town. Like a shirah, you know what a shirah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They sent him to get a shirah to find a wife that would be suitable for a man like my father. And that's the three men went to Grodno and they found the shirah to find someone that would be suitable for my father, for his new wife. And then she had five children after that with the second wife. And one of them was my mother.
Ah. I see. Well, now you were not your father's second wife was your mother.
Yes.
Now, did she die? Did she die
I was 5 years old.
When you were 5 years old, I see. Okay. Well, now what do you remember about the First World War, as a little boy in Vilna?
Okay. It was a war. If you can get in the history, you can go in the library down here.
No, but I mean personally.
I know. I'm just adding this to give you an understanding. Like you said, now you ask me that question because I don't know how much knowledge you have from First World War.
Yeah, see? No, don't tell me about the war. Just tell me what you personally experienced of the war.
Yeah.
What did you see?
One of the big stories. First of all right, I'm going to ramble a little bit, but it's what you are asking me. But I'm going to go from one to the other because it's part of the deal.
Okay.
One big story. I walk into the war is on. Mm-hmm. It's a mile, 2 miles, or 3 miles from where we live. A lot of stories about it, but I'm trying to eliminate. One day I walk in, and saw my wife, my mother. I walk in, I open the door. This is not about my mother. And my father is there. There were soldiers, Germans. They're not the Germans like the Nazis. Germans
World
were nice.
War I,
yeah,
right.
They, we could communicate because German and Yiddish is the same, practically. And three men, and my father is standing like this, as far as I can see, and I'm watching. I don't know what's going on, but I'm watching. But my father seemed scared. One soldier, about three or four soldiers, he has a pistol right here to my father's ear. And what is happening is they were looting. They wanted money. We didn't have money. What do you have? They want food. We didn't have food. What, anything, any silver, this and that. They want something. We had nothing. I'm not going to go into what we had and all that, maybe a little bit. And my father said, we have nothing. You know, we have nothing. And he said, I'm going to kill you. Now, this I remember. I'm not telling you anything I don't remember.
That's what I wanted, yeah.
I'm not going to tell you anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie in anything because I don't lie.
No, I wouldn't want you to lie.
And I told him, my father taught me, he didn't teach, I say it in the negative. My father never taught me how to lie. Got to tell the truth. And that's the way I am. That's the way I was. and he was going to shoot him. But I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what shooting is. So it so happens he had this finger in here, and he was going to kill him. In the meantime, a door opened, an officer came in, and he says, "Put that gun down." And that's all I remember. But he lived, so. And that soldier had to put that down, because the officer told him to put the gun down. They weren't against Jews, the Germans of the First World War. So.
Wow, what an experience,
yeah,
huh?
So. Then I had a sister who died 2 years later. No, wait a second, she died in 1917, I think. No, the war was over. And she had consumption or something. We didn't have any food. We didn't have any doctors. Now, after I was 5 years old, two years later, when my father was remarried to this woman, it would have been my mother. She had me, and then she had another baby after me. I think 2 years later, I'm not sure about that. And my mother was already, the baby was, I can't think of the expression, but the baby was already ready to come out. Mm-hmm. That's the expression I know. And that was my youngest brother. He died maybe about 6-7 years ago. And we didn't have a doctor in the town. So they sent the town. My father was one of these, like a big rabbi in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't have a rabbi. We had a drugstore. I don't know why I could never find out why they had a drugstore. And no doctors. So they sent with a horse and wagon. And my mother was beginning to get the baby to come out within a day or two. So they took a group of men, again, like they wanted to get in Vilna a wife for my mother, for my father.
Uh-huh.
They went to get a doctor, horse and wagon.
Mm-hmm.
It took 3 days for them to come back. To get a with the doctor. When they came back, the baby was born on that day. The baby Milton, yeah. He was born, but my mother died.
Oh.
How we could get over it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know at that time. I didn't understand it.
Uh-huh.
And we had no food most of the time. Sometimes we used to get packages, and there's a lot of stories about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Milton Weber's brother, I don't know, what, 7-8 years ago he died.
But the baby who lived and the baby died. Uh-huh.
Yeah, he went to Carnegie Mellon, and they didn't call it Carnegie Tech at that time from here. And he did hard, he was smart.
So what happened to you when your mother died?
Okay. 19, let me see. I'm trying to think what year, what to say. I'm trying to remember. I was born in 1910. And my brothers that came to America sent us, two brothers, one of them already died. Over in America, sent for us. My brothers were lonely, and they sent for us from Lithuania, and to come to America. And his family started to, you know, make room. You stay here. You stay here. Four of them stay here. One stays here, and I stayed. I was given away because I really don't know why. Because you know. 11 years old, and I came to Ellis Island.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Let me just clarify something. It was soon after your mother died that you came to America?
All right. See, now, my mother died in, let's see, I have to oil this a little bit. 19, she died. I'm trying to think. I have it there, but I can't just get it down to get the picture of it. I was 5 years old. I was born in 1910, so that was...
So you must have been...
So 1915... Go ahead, ask me.
You must have been in Lithuania for 6 more years.
Yeah.
So what happened then? Did you...
My brothers that were already here, they came here when they were 14.
I see.
So when they opened up a business of some kind through relatives, and we were all so... And some of the brothers soon got jobs, they went to school, and learned a little English, but I was too young. She died, what year now? Let's see.
She must have died in 1915.
1915.
So when you...
So then I was sent away, because everybody, the others were older than me, except Milton, who was...
The baby.
Yeah, the baby. And I was sent away. My brother didn't have much money, you know. So cousins and uncles and this and that say, we'll keep him for a year. I'll keep him in New York. They kept me for 9 years, and I learned English and was with kids who were athletes and all that. And I went with them. I never had an argument, except like for instance, when I first came to New York, and I came to my Aunt Tilly, and she was at in-law, an aunt in-law. And the first day I came, it's interesting, this is all I'm thinking, it's a little humorous in a way, if not a little sad. And they brought me in Uncle Max, who was my mother's brother. So I lived with them for 9 years, but the first day they introduced me to his house in Bensonhurst, New York, Brooklyn. And they said, you're going to have to sleep with another Larry there, one of their sons, in one bed there. And I went, and the first thing this Aunt Tilly said to me, she got on her knees, I was this big. So she says, Jack, are you a bedwetter? So I said, Aunt Tilly, no, I'm not. I spoke Yiddish only. And I told her in Yiddish, I said, no, I am not a bedwetter. She says, because my two sons, they were a few years older than me. They were already 13 or 14. They're bedwetters. And I wanted to know if you're a bedwetter. And I said, no, I'm not, Aunt Tilly. And I spoke just Yiddish. And the next day, the same night, I'm assigned to sleep with my cousin. And he was one of the bedwetters. He was 2 years older than me. And he, when he bedwetted in his bed, he shoved me over in the middle of the night. As if I did it. So I think it's an interesting story. It's a little humorous.
Yeah.
So, so the next morning we get up, and Tilly goes up, she makes the bed. I already told her I'm not a bedwetter, and he shoved me over, so I slept on a wet part. And when I come down, then she went up, and I forgot about it, you know. And then she comes down, she's so, you know, bedwetter. And she said, Jack, I want to talk to Yankele. She's going, Yankele, come here. I was upstairs, and your side was wet, that you bedwetted. You told me that you don't bed with, you know. Now, in other words, I can see her. I wasn't dumb. Mm-hmm. I lied to her, and I don't lie. Mm-hmm. Now, and he's standing over there, and he's watching me, and I'm looking at him, and I want him to say he did it, but he wouldn't do it. That's my second day there. Now I lied, and I realize it. Mm. So she says, And what bothered me, and I was looking, and he didn't say anything. And not that I bet with, I didn't care about that. For one reason or another, I lied. Now, what do I do? And she's looking at me. She said, you told me you don't bet me, but you did. She didn't say that. But I'm realizing already I lied. But she was nice, and she didn't say anything. I didn't say a word. I'm looking at him, and I see the way he's looking at me. I think he's 3 years older than me. No, he's 14. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, and he's not saying a word. So I figure if she's going to do something, she's going to send me back. What am I going to say? I can't even speak English, you know. So later on, he bet it again and all that, but then she got to know that it wasn't me.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't lie.
Uh-huh.
And that was my life.
Yeah.
And she knew.
Yeah, let's go back a minute to leaving Lithuania.
Yeah, okay, yeah, all right.
Okay, your brothers were here, your older ones,
yes.
And they sent for you.
Yeah.
And who traveled with you?
I had a sister who died. We didn't have any food, very little.
Do you know what did you eat? What kind of food did you have?
See, everything that you say
brings up a whole lot of things.
Yes, yes.
I understand.
Yeah. I could go on and on and on, so I got to leave it to you.
Okay,
now,
okay.
If you ask me a question, then I know. My memory has been real good on it, and it wasn't bad. That is, my life wasn't bad. I had a good life. Now I am. I'll give you a quick story that happened in here that answers your question.
Okay.
I live now, and this wouldn't mean anything to you, but I'll explain it. There's a place here like similar to this, but it's for older people. I am older. How?
You're 97?
What?
97?
Yeah, past 97.
Uh-huh.
97, yeah. And now I lived in a real in Squirrel Hill, 3 blocks up.
Oh, uh-huh.
I'm getting not now. I transferred. You know, but circumstance and so on. I live in a place that's similar to this, but I have for older people. They can have money, or they don't have to have money and all that. But it's for older people.
Yes,
they have a little shul there. And all. It's 3 miles from here.
Uh-huh.
They call it. I forget. Anyway. But that's where people go, and it used to be called Home for the Aged. It doesn't anymore.
No.
People can have money. They don't have to have money. You eat there. You sleep there. It's your home now. And what was the question?
I was asking you what you did eat when you were in Lithuania.
In Lithuania, most of the time, many times we didn't eat anything. Sometimes a slice of bread. And my father used to leave, he said to my brothers, look, I've got 2 slices of bread here, one for me and one for my younger brother. Don't eat it, 1 slice. They used to send from here, from Pittsburgh or Vandegrift, which is 34 miles from, packages. But there's a war going on over. A lot of times we just didn't have any food. Or we'd have little, and they'd send packages. Then there were ships coming during the war, and they'd sink the ships, or we didn't have anything.
Mm.
Sometimes we'd get sick from it. This one time we got a package. We didn't have any food, hardly any. And we got a package, and we tasted it. They sent back ships. Sometimes the army would sink the ships, the Germans. Or,
mm-hmm.
Or the enemies. But this time we got a package and we took it and we were hungry and all that, and we tasted it and we threw the food out.
Oh.
Why? We tasted it and we didn't like it. What do you mean you didn't like it? How can you not like soup when food when you're hungry? So it was this. We took the package and we opened it and then we started eating it. Well, it was... We thought it was meat, but it wasn't meat, but because it tasted real rotten. What was it? Salmon. We never knew what salmon was. And you take salmon and you eat it and you think it's meat, bad meat.
Oh.
So we threw it out. Oh. You couldn't eat it. Sometimes we'd get an egg or two, sometimes. We were hungry. We were thin. But we didn't know there was anything better. This place that I was trying to, what I was telling you, is 3 miles from
where you live now. There
are 300 people. They're all old. I'm old. I'm 97. See? That's what it is, yeah. So and it's good, about one good meal a day in the evening. The rest, we have somebody to make something. I make it myself. Because my wife is a wonderful, wonderful woman. We were married 65 years and she looked so young and beautiful.
Mm.
But that's why they brought us over in a way, because they were here, they were lonely, my brothers that were here already. And we made, oh yeah. So there, a lot of the people that come, some of them are rich, you know, and they, we get the food and some of them complain about the food. I never complain.
This is where you are now.
Yeah, now. 3 miles from
here. Right.
So they ask me, I'm going to get two stories into it, but it'll mesh. So someone say, they'll come over, people, well, how do you like the dinner today? Now some of them are real well, some aren't, but they're old. I'm old too, but I look younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I was an athlete, and I was in the ring, I was fighting. I think someone is coming today, won't you?
Oh, that's your son. Yeah. He's going away.
Oh,
wait.
Okay. So, they, you know, this is real quick, but it's... so they asked the man, how do you like the food? I don't like the food. Then he come over to me. This happened recently. That would happen often, though. How do you like the food, Mr. Rubin? I said, it's great. So then this man that said that doesn't like the food, it's rotten, so didn't do that. He says to me one time, recently, how come you always say it's okay? The food isn't any good. So I said, I don't know, but I'm called by some of the people, I'm an analyzer. I analyze, like you're talking to me,
uh-huh.
These incidents.
Yeah.
Why do you do it? I'll tell you a quick little story right after that.
Okay.
She goes in with it. So I said, I'll have to think why. So one day he says, do you know why? Yes, I know. I said, what is it? I said, you've had a lot of food a lot of times. You don't know what it means to be hungry. I know what it means to be hungry. I didn't have food a lot of times. So any food is good food for me. And that's why I like food. See, I haven't had any of that. So, oh, they don't understand, but okay. Real quick. My wife, and she was such a beautiful woman. And she looked younger than me. And she was 6 years younger. And I was 37, I got married. She was 20, I was 27, she was 21. But anyway, she said, dear, I made a new dish. At one time she wasn't a good cook, but by this time it was. Also, I lived 3 blocks from here. And I want you to taste this to tell me how the food is. So I forgot to taste it when I came back. I went golfing. I came back. She said, you didn't eat the soup. You didn't. I said, I forgot, dear. So she said, well, eat it now and see, tell me how it is. So I didn't. And she said, well, did you taste the soup? I said, yeah. How was it? So I said, oh, dear, it was good. It was chav, cooked chav. Chav wasn't that good. But I thought, oh, it was good, dear. It was very nice. So, and she said, you liked it? Yes, I liked it. She says, you know what's the matter with you? In that tone. She says, you know what's the matter with you? You like everything. She said, why don't you complain sometimes? Yeah.
And it's the same reason, because
same
you
thing.
Went, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get on track here.
Go
and,
ahead.
And let me
go ahead.
Ask you about leaving Vilna. Leaving...
Vasilyshok.
Yeah, Vasilyshok.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. What about...
When you
they
left...
They sent us tickets, yeah, and I went to Ellis Island.
Yeah, so you...
Good story, yeah. Go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Ask
so you
the
left the you left the town of yeah. Vasilyshok, the
yeah.
village, and then you traveled across Europe.
Warsaw, Liverpool, Antwerp.
And then you and then, the ship. Will you remember anything about the voyage?
I'll give you one story.
Okay.
It's a good story.
Good.
Ellis Island, you know anything about how Ellis Island is? You don't know too much, or do you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's a lake there when you go to Ellis Island. Good lake. This is Ellis Island.
Yeah.
This is the hospital. This is the lake. When I was going, I'm going to try to make this as short as I can, but everything fits in
okay.
to your question. They had decks, two decks, to five of us, a lower and a higher. My brother, who was much older than me, had the higher one, I had the lower one. They have metal beds, regular beds. One fell. Nobody's there.
Yeah, okay.
And the metal fell on my head. I still, if you look through, you don't have to now.
This is at Ellis Island?
That's at Ellis Island.
Uh-huh.
So the four of my family were the regular ones. Regular, they get ready to go over to America. And this bed fell and cracked my skull. And I was the only one on the bottom. My older brother was on top, and it cracked my skull. I was bleeding and all that, bandaged up. And they were in where the regular people are, and I was by myself. I never complained. I never cried. I never asked. But one thing bothered me, in a way, at that time.
Hmm.
When you see me now, I have a yarmulke in me. I didn't know if I was going to meet a rabbi at first or not. And I was worried when I got there. I couldn't speak English, and they couldn't speak Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
And what bothered me, and right now the way I am, I'm not that religious. I go to shul and Shabbos, but not too much. And I didn't have a sitter. It bothered me. I couldn't daven. Today I don't daven. But in Ellis Island, nobody told me. I couldn't speak English, they couldn't speak Jewish, Yiddish, and nobody told me when I'm going to get out. And I used to hear that once you have something wrong and you're in the hospital over there on the other side of the lake, they don't let you in, they send you back. And I thought they were going to send me back. I was there for a week. Nobody said anything. I didn't cry. I was 11 years old. And I figured they'll get sent. I said, what is my father going to do? Analyze it. What is my father going to do? What's he going to do with me? Because I'm going to be sent back. Because of that. And people, the visitors from America used to come and see who came in from Europe. Nobody came in for a week. I didn't cry. I knew what they're going to do. They're going to send me back to Vasilyshok. When I get better, they'll get me. But in 10 days, I was better, and they sent me back. But 10 days, I didn't know. Nobody came to visit me. They were right across. I almost felt like swimming if I could have.
Have been scared.
I must have been scared.
Yeah, but you didn't cry.
Uh-huh. I didn't cry.
Uh-huh.
I was used to all these things, these kind of rooms. I'm going to try. I think maybe I'm talking too much. So,
well, let's move along
okay.
to what happened when you left Ellis Island.
My brothers came over, and the uncle who lived in where you live now, in Madison Square Garden, east side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Lower East Side.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah. And they came and they found they, every day they used to have visitors on the other side and would come down. No, nobody there, nobody. And nobody was there to see me. So I figured, I'll go back. I wasn't afraid of anything. Mm. I wasn't afraid. I still ain't.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you went through so much, I guess.
I fight sometimes. Used to. When I used to going and all. I'm not afraid of anything. Uh-huh. I challenge you sometimes Jewish people when I first came. They used to fight and all that until I learned to be. I was a fighter in the ring. Boxer. Uh-huh.
So did you get, when you were first here, were you considered a greenhorn? Did you
get
teased?
Yeah, greenhorn, or kike by the goyim and all that, Jew boy and all that, and they used to sometimes fight me and I was afraid, you know. But I handled everything. From what I handled in Vasilyshuk and a lot of times no food and this and that, I once went, real quick, I went a funeral. A forest or the goyisha, you know what goyisha means, mm-hmm. I don't know, I really,
yeah.
Because I know you're from New York, so you know. there's a goyisha cemetery, the town, Yiddish cemetery. I went in this big forest, I went to get mushrooms, pick mushrooms. I picked them, and I go out and there's a goyisha funeral, and I'm scared. And I heard that they're going to kill the kids from Europe yet. That was going to kill me. A big cross with a minister carrying, and they're going. And I saw them, and I went out the woods, and I figured, oh, they're going to get me. They're going to kill me. So I ran back in the woods and stayed there for an hour and a half, and then went out so they won't kill me. The funeral was over.
This was in the United States?
In the United States, Vandegrift, 34 miles from here.
Wow.
6,000 people, 10 Jewish families.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's talk about, when you first came to this country, you stayed in the Lower East Side with your aunt and uncle?
Yeah, I stayed there for 9 years.
9 years. And then what led you to, you were going to study to be a rabbi, but then you decided not to.
Yeah.
And why did you decide not to?
Because the family, that uncle and aunt that lived in Bensonhurst in Brooklyn, they were athletes, and I didn't want to be a rabbi. I didn't like rabbi. I wanted to be an athlete. So instead of what was that street near the Paramount there in East End, East Side? Anyways, and I liked it. They were Brooklynites, and I liked that kind of life rather than didn't like. And I wanted a way out, and I couldn't get out of the yeshiva. But I found a way how to get out, and I got out.
Uh-huh. And what about, why do you think you liked the athletics so much?
It was different. I liked it. I was in New York, and nobody was bothering me, and I learned how to fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they called me all kinds of names, and then even with Jews a lot of times, I was a greenhorn. Mm-hmm. And then I became a Yankee.
Okay, so when did you
when you're talking about being a Yankee, I met Big Ruth, and I talked with him, he took me around, but that's all I'm going to say about that. I went to the Yankee Stadium, I took a picture with him, I should have I lost it. Real quick, I interrupted you, I know, but it just came to my bar mitzvah, real quick.
Oh, go ahead.
My uncle comes to me and says, Jack, uncle, you're going to be bar mitzvah. I said, I know. He says, you know, I'm going to have to, pay. He was sort of tight. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't want to use that word. But he just got along, and he says, do you know your bar mitzvah, without me giving you lessons? I said, I do know it, but you're a baby, you better give me a lesson to freshen me up. I don't know how New Yorkers do it, you know. So he said, I'll get someone to give you about four lessons. I said, so he went to the first lesson in Brooklyn, Bensonhurst again, 86th Street and Big Parkway. And the guy didn't listen to me. I knew it was better than he did, the one that gave me to teach me. So I told my uncle, he says, well, how are you getting along? Do you think how many more lessons do you want? I said, he's not listening to me. I'm butchering it a little bit, but he's not telling me that. So he said, well, take another lesson and see what's what. So then I took that lesson. I butchered it purposely. And he didn't correct me. So I told my uncle, I said, cancel the lessons. Anyway, the bar mitzvah came on 82nd Street, a house-like, that's all. None of my family in Pittsburgh and all that came. My father wasn't there, but three people. One, two, three, my uncle, my aunt, and a cousin in that little house they called a shul. And I had three people with my bar mitzvah. I got three presents. One was a baseball glove. I was already a baseball player. I met Babe Ruth, you know. He took me around, Sonny, how you doing, and all that. And my baseball glove, and I got one was a ring, something like this. There's a reason for that, but we won't go into it. I got a ring. My aunt gave me a ring. My father wasn't in at that time for presents and all. I got for him the greatest present even today that I got was from my father, and I loved it. And then I lost it. I could have sold it for a lot of money, but and they say, what did you get from me? Oh, it was the greatest. I loved it. I never got a present before. So I said, I got a $2 bill. Yeah, so that's what it was. Yeah. I lost it later. So,
now, was your father in Brooklyn, or he was already here?
My father was in Vandergrift, which is, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
And then he became a rabbi.
Oh.
And then he made Aliyah to go to Israel not that long ago. And he became a rabbi in Chicago. Rabbi Zivitz, he's a well-known rabbi a long time ago in Pittsburgh, is where he got his smichas, which is rabbinate. He became a rabbi.
I see.
And then he made Aliyah to Israel when he was 85 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to pause here because we've... Let's see. Okay. So now, let's just go ahead and say, when did you come to Pittsburgh? What was the circumstance that brought you from New York to the Pittsburgh area?
I can tell you that. I can try to make it short. I was in New York. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm trying to make this short.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't know what to do when I was graduating high school here in Utrecht. Oh, it was in New York, yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to different places, that's all. I went to one. You never heard of Myron Cope, doesn't mean anything to you. Football.
No.
So I won't go into that. Here they know. But here, I went to his family. They kept me. That's the one about manners. Did I mention manners?
They checked.
They were going with, everywhere I got along, I didn't know. Even in fact, here, I never went to a doctor's. I'd get sick and I never told anybody. So one time somebody says, did you get a shot? And I said, no, I'm not going to get a shot. I got one out once I got sick. Why don't you want to get a shot? Well, they're going to maybe want to charge me some money. Or did you ever get sick and go to a doctor? I said, no. I said, why didn't you go to a doctor? I said, well, if you go to a doctor and I'm living with these people, they'll charge them for a doctor's visit. And they're not charging me for it. It was an uncle and aunt. And he said, well, how much would they charge? He said, $2 a visit. I said, so why don't, oh, if they have to pay $2 for me, they may not like that because they got to pay money. And then, so I didn't ask him, I didn't tell him. So what'd you do? I didn't tell him. I got better, that's all. I never went to doctors. So then I went from place to place to place. And then I went to military camp because everybody was going to camp. Nobody would send me because it cost money. And CMTC, does that mean anything to you? ROTC?
Yeah.
I went to one of those. They paid you to be in the Army. And they paid me to go on to camp. That was a great deal. Boy, I loved it. And then I worked in a post office here in Brooklyn. And I went from job to job, little stuff while I was going to school. $2, $5 a week or something like that. And at the Western Union delivering when the stock market crashed. And then I worked it. I worked in a post office. Then I didn't know what to do, what I'm going to. I went in the Army. And I didn't know what would happen to me. I never discussed it with anyone. Nobody said anything to me. I said, I'll work along. So all of a sudden, one day, he says, you ask me what I did. That's what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you anything that's will take up too much time. So they said, I didn't know what to do, what I'm going to do. I said, I'll get a job. I got a job for $5 a week, $10 a week. So one day, I worked with Western Union, and they were all going. And one day a man comes in, I was afraid of them because they were all going. You know, I was afraid from Europe. Yet. So a man comes over to me, he looked like the Kaiser. Do you ever remember how the Kaiser in World War I? Or not that heavy set, you know, like a great big officer. He comes over and I was afraid to talk to any of them. So he comes over to me, Rabinowitz, I want to talk to you. I said, geez, what did I do? I had a bicycle, I get 10 cents or 5 cents. A telegram, and then the stock market fell, and I was delivering better than anybody else. And he said, I want to talk to you, come into the office. I said, geez, I didn't do anything. I never did anything. I was afraid to do anything. So he tells me, what are you going to do? I hear you're going to graduate from New Utrecht. Yeah. I said, yeah. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. So he said, I'm going to be short. I'm trying to abbreviate it. Yeah. So he says, we watched you. So I said, geez, what did I do? You know, I was taught, you know, be real nice. So he says, what are you going to do when you graduate? So I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know, get a job of some kind. We can get a job for $10, $12 a week. You know, so he says, we like you. What are you going to do? I said, I'd like to be a school teacher. But I said, I don't have any money to go to school. So I said, I'll tell you, we watched you. I was the only Jew there. And I was 12 years old at that time. I don't know. I forgot. I don't want to take time figuring it out. So he says, we'll pay your entire college. You work for us. You can take a job in the morning or at night. But whatever you do, we'll send you either morning or night, and we'll teach you to be. So I said, I'll see, I'll think about it. I always thought I'm going to either be a school teacher, I'm going to work in a post office, which I used to do around Christmas time, or delivering telegrams, or delivering orders. So and I figured, well, this is what I'm going to do. And I often wondered, what is the reason I picked those things? I picked the job.
Yeah, what is the reason?
Why? Security.
Ah.
Please. So I figured, I'm going to see. So in the meantime, my brother came that had stores. They had about 2-3 stores in Vandergrift from here. Mm-hmm. See? And he came, he was sick, and he had consumption, no food. He's the one that brought us over. Mm-hmm. So. He came and he said, he's getting sick, he's got to go out on a farm or near a woods or a lake, because otherwise he's going to die. So he came in, I don't know, 14 years old at the time, I don't know, 16. And he says, what are you going to do? The same thing that this did. So I told him, he says, he's sick. And he had stores and he had managers. And he says, I'd like you to come over and manage a store. I said, I'm only 16 years old. I was never in a store. He says, I don't have anybody that I can trust or do. So anyway, I'll make a long story short. And he says, so that day, I didn't like it. I went. I said, I'll take it. And he says, I'll give you, you're going to manage the store. And then I started, and I didn't like it. People didn't like it. I was a New Yorker. And in a way, excuse me, a smart ass. And I thought I knew more. Here, it used to be, they think the New Yorkers, they think they know everything, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. And they didn't like it. And I was a wise guy. I was over in New York, you know. They're farmers here. So I figured I'm going to get out of here. I don't want this. But on that day, I worked there 52 years. Never late in my life.
Whoa.
I used that a lot of times. Never. Then later I managed. He gave me a store. He was so good to me. He was so good. And he got better. 52 years I spent there.
Wow.
And I lived with him part of the time until I got married.
Mm-hmm. So who did you marry? What was your wife's name?
Frances Silverman. Her father is 12 miles from here, near New Kensington. It's 12 miles from here.
Uh-huh. And how did you meet her?
I felt later on, I felt inadequate about life. And I felt that I couldn't make out too good. I didn't like the people in New York. I felt I was a smart ass there. And little by little, I learned and went, and I graduated high school. And before I knew it, I wasn't liked. I was just a New Yorker that were, you don't like them. A lot of people, when they don't like New Yorkers, I was one of them. Huh. But then I wasn't liked by anybody. I thought I knew more than anybody else. Actually, they knew more than me, but I thought I knew everything. And then I decided the different events that happened. I was going to quit a lot of times, and I figured I wasn't liked at all. I was a New York wise guy. And little by little, I decided I can't go on this way. I was miserable. I couldn't get with girls. They knew more than me, see. And little by little, I got to change. I got to become a man.
Hmm.
And I did. And today, as I'm not going to, in Vandergrift, six families, 6,000 going, but six Jewish families, or 8 or 10, at the most 10. And I'm trying to think, I didn't know how to talk to girls here. You had to be nice and be pleasant. And I said, I can't go on this way. My brother wasn't getting well. And I liked him so much from what he did for the family, and I was going to leave. There were a lot of times he said, what's the matter with this? His sister-in-law was working, or this one. And a lot of people he knew, and I said, business isn't so good. He says, what can you do to make it better? I said, you have to fire him. He said, didn't I tell you to be the boss? I said, yeah. Aren't you doing things well? I said, what is your son? He said, what do you have to do to make him better? Whip him. I said, well, whip him. I said, not me. His wife's sister was one. She was managing a store. Santa was, why is she doing? She's got to, we've got to tell her. I got to whip her. Whip her. I said, I'm staying with your wife. How can I do that with your sister-in-law? Do what you have to do. I said, I'm not going to do it. What are you going to do to get a job? I'm going to leave going back to New York. How are you going to make a living? I said, I can get a job for $10 or $12 a week. Depression, stock market. He says, you're going to do what you have to do. I don't care what. It's your son. You do it. You're the manager. And from there on, I went, here I am.
And you were able then to do it? To do what you needed to do?
Yes. But I'll tell you something else. Today, I left Vandergrift. There were hardly any Jews there. I moved to Pittsburgh because they were already, I don't want to go into a lot because if you could have time, I would, but I'm not going to because, I was there for 52 years. Today, I left Vandergrift because the boys started marrying, wanting to go out with Gentile girls. So I told my wife, we're moving to Pittsburgh, you know. Today I left, they made me the head of the Salvation Army.
Oh.
That's what I, so I said, and I was leaving and told him, he said, you can't leave. So these were all going, they had to have a man who is in charge. So I said, you're having meetings in it and I can't be. They had to have a man who is a lifetime member. You got to be there. I can't. He says, we're having a meeting. We're going to get another one. They had a meeting all going. They decided to make me a life member. He says, you're going to come to me. I said, I can't. I'm blind.
Mm.
You know, They said, we're having a meeting, we want you to. I can't do it. We're going to bring the meeting to here, 34 miles away. All going.
Wow.
They came there. I made them had a little help, a kosher dinner. Here, no going, no eating. And I am the head of the Salvation Army. Oh. 185 going, the only Jew. I'm just telling you this.
Isn't that wonderful?
For here.
Yeah.
I'm a president of other things. And they're all going, but they want me.
Isn't that wonderful? That's wonderful. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions about looking back on all of this. The fact that you came here as an 11-year-old boy, and you had to really start your life over again, what impact do you think that had on you, on your personality, on your outlook?
I've never even told Larry to say that. You know, I tell you because that's, you know, it's story, my life, and all that. It made me a real person. I'm just telling you. It made me a man. It made me a good Jew. A man, a Jewish man, who didn't like me, jealous. If people don't like it, one of the big reasons they are, some people don't like me. Why? Sometimes in the family, too. Jealousy. I was advancing into Yiddishkeit. People have begun to go in one of me. I made Pesach, you know, to go in, to churches. They want me to speak there. I don't tell that to the Jews and all that. It made me a somebody. And this one man says, Jack, he didn't like me. Why? Jealousy. So, and he was 6 months, he just died, basically. He was like me. He was 6 months older than me. He said, he comes, this is the last one on that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Jack, you know, they gave me dinners and honorable and everybody likes you, and you people come. I've had to, every now and then a minister will come in. He wants advice about them.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so he says to me, this Jack, he was an athlete, and he said, I know they gave you honors. I'm just, they're going, no, they're going too, but they, you know, they wouldn't tell you. What a good job you did. So this Jack says, look, they gave you a lot of honors. But you know what's the greatest thing? When I was moving already, I went from there. You know, the greatest thing you've ever done in Vandergrift? Oh, going. I said, no, what is it? You have reduced in the valley three times. You've reduced anti-Semitism in half.
Oh, my. What a compliment, huh? Wonderful. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Is there anything else about coming here, about living out your life here? You have two sons, right?
Yeah, five grandchildren. And six great-grandchildren.
Wonderful, wonderful. So what gives you most satisfaction of what you have done in your life?
Helping people and making it a lot easier for the Jewish people, and to let people know. One minister said to me, after I gave some kind of talk of this and that, he says, you know, Jack, he says, you should see, first of all, sometimes Pesach, birthdays, I get from the Goyim letters, your birthdays and this and that, and then from ministers. And they say, if the minister told, if all the Jews would tell us like you did, about your religion and doing to us and telling us what Judaism is like, he said, and we will tell you our religion,
mm-hmm.
we'd have this in battle. A minister.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've covered quite a bit, and I want to ask, is there anything else you'd like to say before we close?
What the ministers and the priests, too, they come and talk to me. I've had them ask me about marriages. A priest in this case, I said, why don't you tell me? You're a priest. But somebody else came to them about a marriage. And it had to go in with sex, and I says, I can't go into that, you know. And I helped him. I said, why are you? Oh, a man from the group, a member of the church. Larry's looking in from time to time here. I think it. So I said, why don't you go to your priest? He said, I can't do that. They're afraid. I didn't go into it. I didn't want him to tell me. But they're afraid the others will know secrets. And they're going to tell each other. With me, they know I won't tell it.
They know you won't tell a secret. Okay.
To their congregation.
Right.
To their friends.
They can talk to you because you're not going to tell their secrets to their friends.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've been speaking with Jack Rubin, and it's June 22nd, the year 2007. And I want to say that Jack's son, Larry, has given me a CD of an interview with Jack at Ellis Island. That was on national television,
that's it.
A 12-minute, apparently a wonderful one. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. But that is going to be in our library at Ellis Island, and as will this interview be in our collection. I thank you very much, and I'm signing off.
Okay.